Blog Talk Radio.
63 bars.
We begin the fourth quarter.
Yeah. Hey, it's crunch time. It's the last 15 minutes. You want to be a champ? This is where you got to finish. You know we out to win it, so we going to go harder. This is Alabama. Home of the fourth quarter. Now put your foes in the air. Yeah. Now put them up. Now put your foes in the air. Yeah. Now put them up. Now put your foes in the air. Yeah. Now put them up. Hey, Alabama. We aiming for that crystal ball, you can have second. We got them jumping bandwagon since we gave them hell. That trophy case too small, we need another shell. Boy, what a team, we making history. Yeah, we got 13, call us Lord of the Rings. Say we got them going, see that offense flying by. And plus we got the D to make the
And welcome to another Wednesday night edition of BAMS Radio. It's about 8 o'clock, normal start time. I am Thomas the Rock Watts, and I am joined this evening by the one, the only, the man himself, Kerry Clark. Kerry, how are you this evening?
Oh, doing fine. Good to hear from you.
Well, we are looking, Bird might join us if you're just for our listeners, but we're not real sure. He's still going through some health stuff, so, you know, hopefully he'll be here. If he isn't, you know, more power to him. Hope he feels better. We've got a pretty interesting show tonight. Our good friend Drew DeArmond will be calling around 9. He'll talk recruiting and I'm sure various high school games and all manner of things Alabama. So definitely be in tune for that. Until then, you've got Kerry and I. First big topic. Actually, before we really get going, let's give the number to join us. If you want to talk to Kerry or me, give us a call at 714-510-3707. We would absolutely love to hear from you. First thing I wanted to talk about, Kerry, Colorado State game. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but what was your impression of the game? Just overall.
Well, I've definitely seen more inspired Alabama teams take the field at Bryant-Denny.
I have to agree with you there. I kind of feel like I need to eat some crow for saying that Alabama would win by 50 last week and then the team goes out and lays an egg. But watching the game, I kind of took it as a kind of just lethargic, just overall lethargy. I think that's played out in the media since then. You know, the players meeting where the leaders of the team stood up and were kind of had a what the hell moment with the rest of the team. So I have to say that I'm encouraged by the response of leadership. I can't say that I was crazy about the game, but one thing that hasn't gotten as much play is the fact that even Alabama's previous national championship teams had a couple of games where people were just kind of scratching their head. So I definitely don't think it's, you know, the sky is falling, Chicken Little should be started up, should really be going yet. Kerry, I have to admit, I've mentioned off the show, I had a big test this week, so I haven't had a chance to keep up with as much on the Bama beat. Can you tell me, did you get any impressions from the practice reports that things were kind of looking up heading into Ole Miss?
A little bit. One of the big factors in the Colorado State game, aside from the, kind of team kind of playing like they were down the dumps, but one of the big factors was the absence of 6 injured players, and 5 of those have come back and are working mostly at full speed this week. The only exception is backup safety and special teams ace Nick Perry, who is contemplating shoulder surgery that Coach Saban said tonight would end his season if he has it. I don't know if Nick played enough games to qualify for a red shirt or not. I'm thinking that he might be okay on it. You know, the rest of the guys that missed the game are all back, and that's going to be very helpful. And we're talking Jarek Williams, Kevin Norwood, Anthony Steen, Deion Ballou. Deion Ballou, maybe the most important one. because one thing we found out Saturday night of this past week is that, you know, the young corners are pretty good, but they're not seasoned enough yet to go out there and, you know, dominate an SEC opponent that has good receivers like the one that's coming to Tuscaloosa this week. The group of receivers coming to town this week is, I would say, in the top three or four groups that Alabama will play against all year. And they're going to be testing Alabama's corners, whether it's Deion Ballou or Cyrus Jones or John Fulton or, you know, we had Eddie Jackson starting a game this past week, a guy who had not even played in the first two games was starting. You know, a lot of things are going on at the cornerback position. And the return of Deion Ballou is paramount. Now, Geno Smith's showing some good signs of getting back in the groove, but now we're being told that Jarek Williams is going back full speed this week. So we're not positive who's going to start at the nickel position this week. One thing I can't understand, and I'd like to ask somebody that knows more about football than myself, maybe somebody like you, Thomas, is why they don't try Geno Smith at a regular cornerback spot. Why is he pigeonholed into the nickel? Why can't the starting corners be Geno and Deion, and then the nickel be Jarek? Do you have a thought on that? Because I can't fathom it.
I truly, that is a good question, and it's one that I hadn't really thought of. I would assume that Geno Smith's technique, playing on the slot guy versus playing out into the boundary or out wide, is a little bit different technique-wise.
Definitely.
And if I had to guess as to why Geno Smith doesn't see as much work out wide, is because his technique might not be there for that specific kind of receiver. If Geno Smith has what you call, I think the word is, you know, bad hips. And what I mean by bad hips is he can't open his hips up and run with a receiver as well as another corner. That's a big problem, because all you then need to do is beat a jam out wide, and you have to hope that the safety can come over because Geno Smith is a step to a step and a half behind, which is a good way to give up a big play. But I can say that I can't answer your question beyond that. If a listener would like to call in and educate Carrie and myself, we would appreciate it. But that's a good question.
You know what? I can hear the chat room now. Carrie does realize that Coach Saban works with the cornerbacks every day. And, yeah, I do. And maybe Coach Saban has already determined that what you just said, Thomas, is applicable to Geno, and that's why he's not going to play left or right corner. That's why maybe Coach Saban has determined he's better at the nickel. But I'm just curious. I mean, obviously, Coach knows, he's with the cornerbacks every day, and I admit that. I realize that. I'm just throwing that out there because I'd be curious to know how Geno would do out there. I was not terribly impressed with John Fulton this past week.
I have to agree. Fulton has, I don't know if it's between the ears or not, because he definitely did a good job on Mike Evans last year. But the past 2 weeks, he's just been utterly torched, and you can't have that. We're going to get into previewing Ole Miss. Actually, we could probably start now. And a lot of what I'm going to be talking about is how their offense gets you out of whack and in a bad position. I watched the entire Texas Ole Miss game, and it's not like Ole Miss does these crazy route trees where the wide receiver has to have a PhD in advanced college geometry so he can get his angles just right. It's that they do a bunch of little things very, very well and create enough chaos, particularly near the line of scrimmage, that they can rip off a big play. And even if they don't rip off a big play, it's a 5-yard gain. So there's definitely some stuff that you have to have confident corners. And with Bo Wallace, another mobile quarterback, I would expect to see corners left on an island in many cases. But we can definitely get into that much more in depth, probably in the next few minutes. And, you know, that's going to be where the game to me will be won or lost in terms of the Bama defense versus the Ole Miss offense. I think Bama's offense is going to score. I watched Texas gash Ole Miss up the middle. You just have to hope that Denzel Kimdichie, the older brother of Robert Kimdichie, is not such a huge upgrade over their current middle linebacker, because at, literally watching Texas, they ran a dive or a draw whenever they wanted to run, and it was ripping off 5, 6, 7 yard gains. Whenever they went outside, they got 2 or 3 maybe. But plenty to talk about with Ole Miss. Anyway, I had a spot I wanted to go, and I have just fallen out of the back of my mind. I apologize, everybody. I've had a long week. Like I said, I had a huge test, and I just am getting finished with that.
Well, I'll interject something. I didn't feel like that Ole Miss's defense did a tremendous job of stopping Vandy in week one. Now, I know it's week one, but Vandy's breaking in a brand-new quarterback, and they moved the ball fairly well against Ole Miss as well.
The Matthews kid that ended up throwing up for Vandy, that guy had a huge game. And if Amari Cooper starts playing like Amari Cooper, he could have another game like that. I agree.
This will be a good week for that to happen, because other than LSU, I feel like this is the biggest regular season challenge remaining.
I absolutely agree. And there's an interesting little psychological thing that's going on with Ole Miss. And it's simply because they're playing so many freshmen, and they're playing at a very high level. You know, you've got Laramie Tunsil starting. You've got Robert Kimdichie. You've got Tony Connor, who Alabama really wanted, and he's been a baller for Ole Miss. It's this weird thing where Ole Miss doesn't know how good or how bad they are. They're undefeated, and they've played pretty solid games. The Texas win was one of those things where Ole Miss goes up 14-0. Texas battles back, takes the lead, and then about halfway through the third quarter, Ole Miss wakes up and realizes, holy crap, there's a game going on, and just rips off 23 straight points to really beat Texas soundly at home in Darrell K. Royal Stadium. So, you know, I am curious to see, as a Bama fan, as a Bama sport, as a Bama analyst, as a football person, what happens to the Ole Miss Rebels when a team like Alabama, that has all this experience and they know what they need to do, comes in and really hammers on Ole Miss early? Does Robert Kimdichie, when he's matched up with Cyrus Kwanjo, and Cyrus Kwanjo has the legitimate possibility of dominating him 9 times out of 10, what happens to Robert Kimdichie? What does he do? Does he mail it in? Or does he just compete that much more? That's kind of a scary thing for Hugh Freeze, because the truth of the matter is, you can think you know, but you don't know. And that's kind of a wild card thing with Ole Miss that I think is really interesting, that Alabama won't have to deal with again. Quick interjection for fans. Kerry is telling me in our back chat that our good friend Big Head Chuck will be calling in around 8:30. I have heard rumors, and I will neither confirm nor deny them. I will let Kerry do that, that we will have some Big Heads barbecue at the tailgate this weekend. Kerry, can you shed some light on that for us?
Yes. I did speak to Chuck by cell phone last night, and there was a little bit of question about it. We're trying to figure out what Bird's plans are. But what we do know is that the tent will be up in front of Little Hall, and the barbecue will be there. Matter of fact, Chuck will only be able to speak to us for a few minutes tonight because he's busy cooking. And I can tell you, if you get a chance to come by, we're right across from the quad. The BAM's radio tent is very easy to spot on the front lawn of Little Hall, and it's right next door to the Shelby County Alumni Chapter tent. They're our neighbors and our friends, and you do want to come and check out Big Head Chuck's barbecue. We're going to get in. We're going to let him tell you a little bit more about what he's bringing. I don't think he's bringing his full menu this week, but he's bringing enough to where you'll be able to sample a couple different things, and you will want to start doing business with Big Head Chuck after you've eaten his barbecue. I can tell you that. But we're going to let him tell the full spiel here in about 15, 16 minutes.
Absolutely. I was letting you prime our palate, if you will, for that what will be – probably a very scrumptious segment, if you'll pardon my terrible alliterations. Wanted to say one more time, if you want to get in the conversation with us, it is 714-510-3707. We have lines open, and we would love to hear from you.
Let's go ahead and jump on into Ole Miss. It's about 8:15, so we can spend the next 15 minutes actually getting into the guts of this. I know I sort of previewed what I think Ole Miss-Alabama is going to happen. The psychological thing, no one knows. I spoke to it before, and let me interject. Yes, same place as last year to the chat room, same place for the Bam's tent. So come see us. I know I'll be there. So, Carrie, I don't want to speak for you, but I believe you'll be there too.
Indeed.
Great. And, you know, come join us. We'll be having a good old time. But let's talk about Ole Miss. Let's talk about the Ole Miss offense first. Now, I kind of previewed this. Bo Wallace, the Ole Miss quarterback, junior, now second year starting. He's gotten a lot better in that he hasn't given up a lot of turnovers. If you remember last year's game, Bo Wallace arm punted a few balls and threw picks. And the picks really set Ole Miss back so far against Alabama that they couldn't dig themselves out of the hole. Well, so far, a lot better stats. And he hasn't gotten beaten up as much. He does still quarterback keep, but he's figured out this magical thing called get the hell out of bounds or get the hell down if someone's near you. So definitely improved quarterback play for Ole Miss. The other thing you need to look for is Jeff Scott in the backfield. Jeff Scott is 5'7 on a tall day. So he's this little jitterbug guy that's really, really fast. Ole Miss loves to run the zone read option. I've expounded on the zone read option ad infinitum on this program, but basically the zone read option is a play built around what the defensive end does and the quarterback reads the play. Well, if you want to link what's happening with the zone read to the NFL, the zone read has kind of fallen out of fashion. And the reason for that is, at least in the NFL, and I think they could probably do this in college too, it just hasn't been as big an issue, the quarterback loses his protection when he becomes a runner. And he's considered a runner when he goes to hand the ball off on an option. So the NFL, the defensive people, personnel in the NFL are being told to just annihilate the quarterback, and it's totally legal. As an offensive coordinator, you don't want your quarterback getting constantly blasted by 300-pound defensive linemen. It's just not a recipe for success. Consider Robert Griffin III of the Washington Redskins. Great quarterback, but he was playing on a bad wheel for the last 4 or 5 weeks of the season and eventually destroyed his ACL in the playoffs. You don't want that to happen in the fourth game of the year, fourth game of the year. So I'm not sure you'll see Bo Wallace do as much running. He might do some keepers if Alabama's defensive ends crash, but you don't really know. The thing you also need to realize is Ole Miss has some quality depth at receiver. I personally don't buy the Bo Wallace assertion that Ole Miss has better wide receivers than Texas A&M. I think that Mike Evans is so good that he's kind of like Calvin Johnson in a way. He's going to draw double coverage, and he's going to make everyone around him better. Dante Moncrief, the Ole Miss, basically he splits far out. He's a very good player, but he's not Mike Evans. The other guy worth noting is the young freshman Laquan Treadwell, solid 6'3", 200, 220 guy. Slot guy, huge for a slot guy at 6'3", but he's been making plays. I believe he leads the team in receiving. So Ole Miss does have depth, and how they attack you is a very interesting thing worth speaking of. Ole Miss loves to run slants and little screens and stuff basically within 5 to 8 yards of the line of scrimmage. Well, that is by definition a high percentage throw. And I actually was tweeting about this during the Bama game. A lot of what Colorado State did that worked was the 3 yard down and in, the bubble screen, the slip screen, the drag route, the crossing route, et cetera, et cetera. Carrie, help me out here if I'm missing any of them. And Grayson, the Colorado State quarterback, he averaged 6 yards a throw. That's not very good. But he also completed a ton of his passes, and the ball kept moving. So Ole Miss wants to do a lot of that. And as an Alabama fan, you kind of have to be worried. How does the secondary respond? Do they play press?
Do they drop into shallow zones? I know Nick Saban knows what he's doing in terms of coordinating this defense and getting them into places where they can have success, but that's kind of a spot where Alabama in the Colorado State game had a problem. Ole Miss is able to exploit that problem better than Colorado State did. So it'll be interesting to see if Alabama's corners decide to play a lot of press man, which I think they will, particularly if Deion Blue comes in. If they play press man, that the slants and the drags and the crossers, you have to win at the line of scrimmage for those to work. And if Alabama's corners can out-physical the Ole Miss receivers at the snap, the whole thing falls apart. So I think Alabama can adjust to that. But the main thing running through my head as I watched the Ole Miss-Texas game is, oh, my Lord, Texas is giving them tons of cushion, and Ole Miss is just dinking and dunking. And then they do some double move with Dante Moncrief, who is a pretty fast receiver, and it's a 60-yard touchdown. Could be that's the kind of thing you will see. Haven't spoken about the tempo for Ole Miss, but they play fast. Do they play as fast as Oregon? No, but they can definitely push tempo, and that exacerbates the problems they create with the short passing line of scrimmage stuff. It's quicker turnarounds. You've got to get set faster, et cetera, et cetera. As Alabama fans, it's kind of the same thing, same song, different verse. Play fast, try and tire out Alabama's defense, and hope it works. Is it going to work? I don't think so. I think Ole Miss is a little overrated, but remains to be seen. Now, let's talk about how the Ole Miss defense really wants to get in on everything. And I know I'm kind of monologuing, so if chat has questions for Carrie or I, or you want to shut me up because you're tired of hearing my voice, give us a call at 714-510-3707. We would love to take your call about Colorado State, about Ole Miss, or if you want to hold on to talk to Big Head Chuck in about, 10 minutes, we can do that too. Anyway, as I was saying, how the Alabama offense is going to attack the Ole Miss defense. I was very surprised watching the Texas game, and I'll just say it, Texas is discombobulated right now. Having to fire your defensive coordinator and all these questions, the team is just kind of, I don't want to say it, not all there is not fair, but just kind of on tilt. I think that's the best way to put it. But still, Texas ran right at Ole Miss, at just like literally in between the tackles, and was just gashing and gashing and gashing. So I think Alabama will have success there. There's no Tonga, this Colorado State nose tackle, which had a fabulous game against Alabama. There's no that guy for Ole Miss. There's no huge space eater. So I think Alabama can have success there. Like I said, though, Denzel Kimdichie, the freshman All-American linebacker, will be back in the middle. So the question becomes, does he shore up the run defense or does he not? That's going to be a big key. Antonio Connor, who, you know, Carrie and I who talked about his skill set while he was being recruited, it came down to Ole Miss or Alabama, he's shown a good ball skills and his ability to stick his nose near the line of scrimmage and make a big hit, make a big tackle. That's a spot to look. I still think that if Amari Cooper is Amari Cooper, that Alabama's offense could have a big game. If the Ole Miss defense decides to try and pinch in the middle to stop that just blasting up, you know, blasting with dive plays or draws, stuff on the outside will open up, and that's where Alabama's strength running is. When you get Anthony Steen or Ari Quanjo pulling around the center and just basically setting that edge, that's where all of T.J. Yeldon's big runs have come from. So that's where I think you'll see success. Again, I think Ole Miss is a little overrated. I think that everyone's confidence is riding very high over there. I know that some friends of mine who are Ole Miss fans have been talking some serious trash to me, and I just kind of smile and shrug. But I think it's still a mismatch. I think the line of 13.5 is a little high, but definitely not going to be a one touchdown game. But we'll definitely give picks later on in the day. I want to quickly answer a question from a good friend RTR1 in the chat. Question is, does Ole Miss still move Robert Kimdiche, the defensive lineman, around a lot on the defensive line? Short answer is yes. Robert Kimdiche, nation's number one overall recruit last year, committed to Ole Miss and is now starting. He starts at defensive end, but he can play some defensive tackle. One of the criticisms has been, because he's so young, he hasn't developed a full repertoire of pass rush moves. He does a lot of bull rushing. And when you've got a left tackle as big as Cyrus Kwanjo, that can create problems because Cyrus can extend his arms and slow him down. But you'll see Kimdiche line up at defensive tackle, left defensive end, right defensive end. And even though he is young, there's a reason he was considered a physical freak out in high school. He is. He's a very athletic player. He's still kind of raw, but he's very athletic. So, you know, that's something to watch. That might be, if you're an NFL guy, if your team is having a rough go of it, you know, if you're a Browns fan or a Vikings fan, you know, one of the teams that's kind of left a little rough around the edges, the Kimdiche versus Kwanjo matchup will be one worth watching, even if you have no dog in the proverbial fight between Alabama and Ole Miss. Definitely a couple of future pros looking around. So definitely something to look forward to. Kerry, help me out. Am I missing something? Did I not mention something here? I feel like I've just been rambling for 15 minutes.
What about the Ole Miss secondary against the Alabama receivers?
I think that'll be an interesting matchup. Ole Miss had a decent game against Texas. Mike Davis, the Texas number one, definitely had a couple of double moves or start and stop routes. And to illustrate what I mean to fans, a stop and go, the wide receiver runs 10, 15 yards, stutter steps to hope and hopes the corner, hoping the corner will bite on the stutter, and then takes off straight down the field and basically outruns everything. So I saw a couple of those where the secondary got beat bad and had to have one of them was a pass interference and one was just a bad throw from Case McCoy. So I think it's a decent matchup. Let me take a step back. I still think the way to beat Alabama is to stack the box, which means leaving your cornerbacks on an island. And this comes back to something we've said a couple of times, Kerry and I, in this program. If Amari Cooper does what Amari Cooper can do, then you could look for a big game from them. And once Cooper forces them out of that man-to-man or cover one man, the whole playbook opens up. So I would look for a big game, assuming if the thing about defending Alabama's wide receivers is if Amari Cooper is doing what Amari Cooper can do, what fans know he can do, you almost have to put two people on him. Well, you put a corner and a safety on him. You're now playing 10 on 9. And you know, what do you do? Do you then zone? Do you hope your other corners can stand up with that? That's a tall order to do throughout plays. And if you play man, a big running play gets even bigger because the cornerback has to turn and run with that wide receiver if the wide receiver gets past him. Or if it's a called, you know, absolute direct run, the wide receiver has a really easy blocking assignment. So there's a lot of give and take that could happen here. And I personally really am looking forward to that part. I want to see Alabama's wide receivers continue to mature. And I think, you know, again, Alabama's been winning with the pass, so there's a key for the game. Do Alabama's wide receivers consistently win? One of the things that one of my good friends on Twitter, at Living Crimson, excuse me, he and I were chatting throughout the game, is did the wide receivers get separation for Alabama? One of the reasons A.J. McCarron had to have the 3-yard checkdowns on 3rd and 9 is wide receivers didn't win as much, and that's a problem. If they don't win, then Alabama's going to stall out as it stands. Excuse me. We do have a caller on, Kerry, and
If you call, let me preface this. I'm not going to be able to screen you because it's just Carrie and I. So I'm going to bring
you. Is it a 251 number?
No, it's a 256 number.
Okay.
And I do want to give a shout out real quick to RTR1, and Carrie, you can comment on this. How about Chris Black getting his first catch and touchdown last week? I was very impressed. I was very happy for the young man. What about you?
I was happy for him, too, because I've been hearing how he thought he should be playing a little more and was wondering what the deal was. And so now he's got a collegiate touchdown, and you know, he's got something on film to show the coaches that he does deserve maybe to play a little bit more. So I thought that was big for the young man. And something I wanted to throw in regarding the wide receivers and all that, the honorary wide receiver who is listed as a tight end, young O.J. Howard, is also, I think, going to be a factor this week, very big factor.
Oh, absolutely. That was going to be my next thing to prompt you about. O.J. Howard goes from dropping that pass against Virginia Tech to having a pretty solid, I would say even big game against Texas A&M, and just continues rolling against Colorado State. Talk about a matchup nightmare. Let's spotlight O.J. Howard here briefly. 6'6", 240. Name me one linebacker or safety or corner that can cover someone that size. It's just the guys that can cover an O.J. Howard person do not grow on trees. So, I mean, that's a huge deal. O.J. Howard over the middle, you just kind of have to hope you can pop him as he catches the ball and it's not ruled targeting. That's a major weapon. And thank you so much, Kerry, and our good friend King of Twitter in the chat for spotlighting that. I do appreciate it. Let's go on and bring our caller on. Just one second. I will make you live. I'm doing a little too much right now. 9146, you are live on BAMS Radio. How you doing this evening? What you got for us?
Hey, guys. This is King. What's going on?
Oh, hey, King. Good to hear from you.
Well, I've been listening to you guys analyze everything. I don't know. Are we ready to explode? Some parts of me says, are we about to explode? Are these kids bored? Are they bored? We weren't going to beat up on Jim McElwain. We weren't going to beat up on them. And they just kind of went through the motions for me. I think they're bored. I absolutely think they're bored, and I think they may have a little attitude. I don't know. But I'm just so used to seeing dominating every play, making the third downs, you know, and when we don't do it, I mean, we're still winning. We're still winning big margins at just style points, I guess. I mean, I guess we're just not winning the way we want to win, crushing people. And this game Saturday night is huge. It is very huge. And I see some stars shining. O.J. Howard, I think he is. He's the next generation, Ozzy. I'm telling you, man. I remember when Ozzy played, so that's how old I am. So he's got the same kind of build, and he can just find those spaces. I just feel watching AJ in his little press conference, he just seems to be a little upset, and I think he's right. There's some communication issues. There's some things happening, and you know, it's like I've always said, if we're mad about it, Saban's 10 times mad about it, and he's aware of it. But we're just going to have to deal with the fact either we'll find out Saturday night if we have a really good football team, or if it's a shootout kind of deal that our defense may not be where we need it to be, but we can score and play that style of game. I think Gary Danielson said that on Feinbaum. He said that Alabama showed you maybe that they've got another way they can beat you in a shootout, which I can't really ever remember Alabama being a shootout kind of team. We've always been 3 yards cloud of dust kind of running. So, you know, but I don't know. This is going to tell a story. I kind of said rope-a-dope all along. These kids are ready to explode on some guys. But I'm tickled to be where we're at, and it's our destinies in our, you know, it's in our hands. So, and I think, Kerry, you know about that? We've talked about this before, and that's emotion in football. And
well,
this,
you know,
this
King,
is huge.
I think it is huge. I think what we're going to find out Saturday night, King, is whether this is a special team, a team of destiny in Tuscaloosa, or whether it's just another 2010 where you had
exactly.
a really great,
it's
you
true.
Really had a great
nailed
team,
it.
But they got kind of entitled and they let some of it go to their head and they lost three games. Probably shouldn't have lost any of them. Definitely shouldn't have lost two of them. But that's, you know, we're going to find out this week if that speech that was given in the locker room this past week by C.J. Mosley, Vinny Sunseri, and A.J. McCarron, who I'm glad he stood up to his teammates because he acted like a little baby in the interview room Saturday
well, night. Correct me if I'm wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong. I've always just admired the synchronization of our offensive line when they show the slow motions and show them, you know, trucking those guys right out. I mean, it's just like we're just, I don't know, we're just a little bit out of sync in some areas. And I don't know, you know, we're having a lot of illegal procedures and things like that. And those are mental mistakes, I know, but still, I'm happy to be where we're at. And, you know, I just think our defining moment is going to let us know Saturday night. And you guys nailed it. I mean, it's, we'll know. Because, listen, and what timing on playing that Manning, the Book of Manning, which I thought it was an excellent, excellent piece of work. That's a wonderful job on that. But and I also noted that if you'll notice the way Archie run around on the video, throwing the ball and scampering, he reminded me a lot of Johnny Manziel. So that's what I tweeted
last somebody-
night.
Did
you see that?
I saw most of it. I told somebody today that, you know, you just said Alabama was not a shootout team, but there was a shootout at Legion Field in 1969 where Archie Manning threw for over 400, ran for over 100, and still got beat by Scott Hunter in Alabama. So sometimes they do turn out to be shootout. That was a good comparison, though.
Was it 34-33?
Something like that. Or,
and
yeah,
listen,
like,
let me tell you something. Archie Manning, his senior year, got his forearm broke. Got his forearm broke. Missed all year long, come back, played in the Gator Bowl, played the whole game, had 375 yards passing and nearly 100 yards rushing with a broke freaking arm. So he was the real deal. He's just so tough, raw bone, and I just really was blown away by that. The thing that struck me is his kids would say, "We never knew they won or lost." And, you know, not to bring that home for him, I think that really was good. I was very impressed with the whole deal. But listen, guys, I'm going to get off it. Y'all got a great show going. And yeah, hey, if y'all coming to eat at Bams, man, you got to get some of Jerry, I seen you eat them triple threats over there. I know you're going to be jonesing for some of that.
Yeah, I don't think the triple threat's making the trip this week, but he's bringing everything up. But I want to make one more comment about the Manning special. Maybe you can identify with this a little more than Thomas. But, you know, all those plays where they show the little boys playing in the backyard, all those times Cooper kept grabbing Peyton's face mask and horse collar and all that, that kind of explains to me why Peyton is 6'2" with a 4-inch neck.
That was really cool, man. I really enjoyed it. But, you know, I think, like I say, college football is all about emotion, and I think we got to control the momentum Saturday night. We got to get them out of it quick. And I think that's going to help us.
The crowd's got
to
buy in.
Oh, yeah. Well, we got to, man. We got to get energized. But listen, hey, love y'all. Y'all do a great job. Keep it up. I'll see y'all.
Appreciate it.
That was our good friend King Crimson joining us. If you would like to join in on the conversation, the number is 714-510-3707. And I do want to put out a call if someone will call in and help me out a little bit. I did not get a chance to see either the Manning thing, which is already we've already talked about a little bit, or the Derek Thomas documentary on NFL Network. If someone could call in and give us a quick review, I would really appreciate it. I was looking forward to it, but I was just crazy busy, so I haven't had a chance to catch it yet. So I would absolutely love to hear about that. Anyway, it's about 8:40. I have been talking a ton, so I need a little breather, and we think that Big Head Chuck will be calling in the next couple of minutes. Gary, let's take a quick break, and we will be right back for more BAMS Radio.
That's good.
Get ready for a touchdown of savings that will make you want to do your own end zone dance. With Atlantic Bedding and Furniture.
Atlantic Bedding and Furniture.
Unlike the chain furniture stores, Atlantic Bedding and Furniture gives the Bama fan a choice in fine furniture at super low prices. We have over 30,000 items always in stock. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture will have exactly what you need for your rec room, man cave, or however you wish to celebrate that latest Bama victory. Our selection includes Simmons, Serta, Broyhill, and other name brands at a fraction of what other chain stores charge. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture is close by in Pelham, Alabama, on Highway 31. Come see us or check out our website at www.AtlanticBeddingAndFurniture.com. www.AtlanticBeddingAndFurniture.com. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture, the place to shop for great furniture deals with financing available.
There is a house in New Orleans. They call the rising sun, and it's been the ruin of many a poor boy.
Radio. We are expecting our friend Big Head Chuck to be calling in the next minute or two, and then our other buddy, Drew DeArmond, will be calling in around 9. So we have an action-packed next 45 minutes, hopefully. Until then, Carrie, we do have a quick question from the chat room. It's from our good friend, our buddy King of Twitter. I have to paraphrase this. Do you think that Nick Saban will play Blake Sims or Alec Morris if Alabama gets up in a big lead either this week or any week later?
Blake Sims. For a while, and then maybe Alec at the end of the game. But Blake's still the number two guy. He's going to still come in when the number two offense comes in.
I figured as much, but I truly, like I said, I have been way off the beaten path in terms of the Alabama beat this week. And then I'm going to take this question from the chat room, because this is just kind of hilarious and off the beaten path. And this, I'm just going to straight say this. If the Auburn excuse for the loss to LSU was it was raining, do we, you and I, Kerry, think that Tammy went out and bought the team a slip and slide? A little bit of humor this evening on BAMS. I know you've had a chance to meet Tammy, Kerry, so I'm just going to kick this one to you. I'm trying not to laugh.
Since she doesn't hardly ever actually go to a game, I'm going to say no.
Fair enough. And saving us from our somewhat random humorous chat roomage, we have another caller on the line, and I have just made him live, and it is our good friend Marty. Marty, thanks so much for being with us this evening. How are you?
Thank God it's Wednesday and Bounds Radio's on the air. It always makes me feel good to get this in the middle of the week, and man, it makes the week go by a whole lot better. Good to hear from y'all guys. Y'all doing a great job tonight.
One quick thing about
the game. I got very frustrated watching the game. I had to calm down a little bit and take a deep breath and look back, because you know the team played like they really, you know, just wanted to get. I kind of agree with King Crimson. They just played with no urgency at all, none, period. I mean, just like they wanted to go through the motion, get this game over with. I hope that's what it was, and it's just not the reality that they are the 2010 team. You know, I'm hoping that we've got some leadership that's not letting them fall into that, but it really felt like that this team had no urgency whatsoever to get anything done. You know, and you know, I really can't believe that Nick Saban would say, you know, we don't want to make Jim McElwain look too bad and do all this. I think those Colorado State boys come to play football, you know, and I think they really thought they had a chance to do good. I don't think they really believed they could win the game, but I don't think they wanted to be embarrassed, you know. But anyway, I wasn't impressed with the game at all, period. I wasn't impressed with the running game. I wasn't impressed with the offensive line. You know, I just wasn't impressed with the play at all on the team. Even though we won by 25 points, it seemed like we barely got by on the game. But that's just my take of the Colorado State game. You know, and I got a quick question for Thomas and Kerry. You know, Alabama's had number one recruiting class several years. I can't count how many years they've actually been number one in recruiting, but what's the deal that we cannot get a premier pass rusher? You know, I watched the special of Derek Thomas. He was a premier pass rusher. I mean, nobody could stop him, you know. You would think out of all the recruiting classes that we went through that we could land at least a premier pass rusher. What's the deal with that?
Well, go ahead, Thomas.
Sure. Well, one of the things that's interesting about the Alabama 3-4 defense is what you would consider the premier pass rusher, the Jack linebacker spot, also has other responsibilities in the 3-4. It isn't just stick your hand in the ground and rush the quarterback. There's also a lot of dropping into coverage. There's a play that I can remember where I jumped up and down and cheered Adrian Hubbard this past week, where the Colorado State running back scrapes out into the flat and Hubbard immediately adjusts, chases him down and ends up breaking up the play. Even if the play had been completed, Adrian Hubbard was on top of the running back and it would have been a 2 or 3 yard gain. So that's one of the problems with getting a premier pass rusher. The other thing is what you'd consider the typical pass rusher, the defensive end in a 3-4, is not. A 3-4 defensive end is completely different from a 4-3 defensive end. A 3-4 defensive end is bigger and is a space eater. You're supposed to maintain your gaps and basically hold on at the point of attack. The three down linemen, in many, many cases, they don't rush as much. They're just interested in keeping the linebackers clean to make plays. Now, speaking of why Alabama hasn't gotten one of the elusive premier pass rushers, that's part of it. The other part of it is, there just aren't very many of them. You know, they're not – Robert Kimdichie's and Jadeveon Clowney's don't grow on trees. All that said, keep an eye on Jonathan Allen, the young defensive end from Virginia. Guy has very good reviews in terms of getting to the quarterback and will probably see the field, particularly with Dalvin Tomlinson going down with that unfortunate knee injury. Kerry, what about you? What do you think on this issue?
I heard a talk about a week and a half ago, by a recruiting analyst, and he said a lot of what you just said, Thomas, regarding the fact that I'll add a little bit to it. What Thomas said about the Alabama defense, the defensive ends are more like glorified defensive tackles, and the outside linebackers don't blitz every play. Sometimes they drop back in coverage is true. And then when rival coaches are talking, recruiting somebody like Jadeveon Clowney and Robert Kimdichie, And this year they're going to use it on Lorenzo Carter and Deshaun Hand, so we may or may not get either one of those. What they tell them, Marty, is that if you go to Alabama, their defense is not set up for you to get a bunch of sacks, so you really won't get a lot of sacks at Alabama. And they're telling the truth. The Alabama defense is set up more to affect the quarterback, you know, make him throw it before he wants to, make him throw it to somebody who's not open, stuff like that, than it is to actually sack him. And Saban actually gets mad when reporters ask him why they're not getting enough sacks. But it's because the defense at Alabama, being a 3-4 that don't blitz all that much, is just not set up for a guy to get a lot of sacks. And when somebody like Clowney is told that, or Deshaun Hand or Lorenzo Carter or Robert Kendiche, and they can get them in the film room and show them the 4-3 versus the 3-4, sometimes that makes the guy that gets sacks in high school not want to come to Alabama, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I agree. I do understand that. But, you know, I know we run a lot of four linemen on these spread teams that we're playing, you know, and we're still not getting the sacks. You know, you look at Colorado State. I give them credit. Those boys played hard. They got on McCarron. I mean, McCarron got grass on his pants this – I mean, grass stains on his pants this week. You know, he got sacked, you know, from those guys. You look at teams like that. I've seen Alabama play teams like it over the years, smaller teams, and they get a push from those tackles getting in on it. Virginia Tech, for example, they got in on McCarron, you know, rushed him and put pressure on him. You know, it just seems like we're just not – I don't know if we're just missing on these defensive tackles that just don't have that quick step to get in there. You know, we hadn't had one since Darius, you know. He had that quick step. But we're missing that type of a push player, in my opinion, this year.
I think A'shaun Robinson could develop into that later.
Yeah, I guess he's just young right now and learning his position, you know. But you, after watching that Derek Thomas special, you know, it was amazing how quick Derek Thomas – they knew what he was going to do, and he still would get by the offensive tackle, the left tackle. It was just amazing. That, you know, I heard Thomas say something about somebody calling in and talking about that – the Derek Thomas special, you know, the guy on the other end, I can't remember his name, that played with Derek for so long, but he got to where he would look, he would watch Derek on the line of scrimmage, and when Derek took off, he took off, because he had never seen anybody that had that quick of a step off the line of scrimmage as he did. It was an amazing story, you know. Hated that that guy had to end in a tragedy, in a wreck like it did.
Well, the other tragedy here is Derek Thomas is not in the College Football Hall of Fame. That's a very sore spot for Alabama fans, right?
That's a joke. That is a joke.
Anyway, we've gone over that a bunch of times, but I'm going to keep bringing it up. And, Marty, thanks to our friend RTR1 in chat, Neil Smith is the guy you're talking about that played alongside Derek Thomas.
Yes, that's correct. I mean, it was a really good special. I really enjoyed it, you know. But I'm going to get off here, guys. And well, one thing though, I didn't hear any participation. You know,
wow, I was wondering if we were going to get to that. Well, Marty, Alabama played 58 players against the Colorado State Rams. Unfortunately, some of them didn't come in to the very, very end of the game, whereas the plan was hopefully to get them in a little earlier. But offense started Cyrus Kwanjo, Ari Kwanjo, Ryan Kelly, Kellen Williams, and Austin Shepherd on the line. Vogler at tight end. They actually started double tight ends with Brandon Green making his first start. Jawson Fowler got his first start at running back because of the one-quarter suspension of Yeldon. A.J. at quarterback, and Kenny Bell and DeAndre White were the starting receivers. On defense, they went with Ed Stinson, Brandon Ivory, and Jeffrey Pagan up front. Linebackers were Adrian Hubbard, Trey DePriest, C.J. Mosley, Denzel Duvall. This is the base defense is what they started in. And the secondary was Bradley Silve, Eddie Jackson, both making their first starts at corner. And then the veterans at safety, Vinny Sinceri and Ha-Ha Clinton Dix. Off the bench, they came with D. Hart, John Fulton, Reuben Foster at the very end there on defense, Jabril Washington, Derek Henry, who got a carry and made yards, T.J. Yeldon, who looked well when he came in there, when he got blocking, Chris Black, we mentioned, got his first touchdown, Cyrus Jones, Blake Sims, Ryan Anderson at backup jack, Adam Griffith kicked off a couple times and kicked the last extra point, actually, his first points in a Bama uniform. Tanae Patrick, Kenyon Drake looked good again, Reggie Ragland, Maurice Smith, Christian Jones, Altie Tempene looked good, but I noticed he was limping off the field. Geno Smith, Dylan Lee got his first career touchdown. He scooped up a block punt by Drake. Landon Collins, who almost scooped it up, almost stripped him. Cody Mandel, Cade Foster, Xavier Dixon, who also can rush the passer at times. We just need to see more of it this year. Alphonse Taylor at guard. Cole Mazza, Tim Williams, Isaac Luatua, Leon Brown, Raheem Falkins, Harrison Jones, Malcolm Faison, A'shaun Robinson, Parker Barano, who's a walk-on wide receiver who's now played in two games this year from American Christian in Tuscaloosa. O.J. Howard, another good game for him. Jonathan Allen, who will also, as Thomas said, develop into a pass rusher, the hope is. And then Darren Lake, the backup nose guard. So, Marty, a total of 58 guys got in.
Wow, that's amazing. You know, if I can make two quick points, if you have time for me to, you know, after you bringing up that participation chart, Eddie Jackson, I mean, he looks impressive, you know, a physical presence on the field. You know, I believe that that guy learns his position, he's going to be a great talent at Alabama. I really do. But, you know, anyway, I'm going to get off here and let y'all talk, and hopefully Big Head Chuck will come on.
He's waiting right now, Marty. I'm really looking forward to Drew coming on, too.
And so I'm going to get off here again. Roll Tide, guys.
Roll Tide, Marty. Thanks for the call, man.
Roll Tide, Marty. Thanks so much for calling us. And
speaking of Big Head Chuck.
Yeah. Our next caller, we've been bragging about him and his crazy good cooking for the past, almost hour. Yeah, basically since we started the show. It's our good friend, Big Head Chuck. Chuck, you are live on BAMS Radio. How are you doing this evening?
What's up, fellas? Man, I got smoke. I smell like hickory and pecan right now.
Oh, wow.
I'm okay with that.
Be a good time to give you a man hug.
Man, I've
Chuck,
got the smoker.
What's coming up this weekend, man?
I've got the smoker packed full of chicken. I'm making Bama Dog, his mother called and asked for me to go a little on the healthy side. She's wanting some smoked chicken, so I got her some smoked chicken. But I got butt. We got Kaneka sausage. I got baby back ribs. I got baked beans and slaw and the award-winning Big Head barbecue sauce.
I love it. We're going to miss the triple threat, but we'll look forward to it making an appearance this week.
Yeah, the triple threat, it's very articulate, and I'm pressed for time this week. I've got to leave Friday morning going to Vicksburg for some work, and then when I leave there, I'm coming straight to Tuscaloosa. But, you know, I don't want to wear out the triple threat at every game, so I'm going to show some Tennessee and some LSU fans what good cooking is all about. And
there you go.
They're going to get to sample the triple threat. But guys, I am so excited. If I could leave right now and start setting up on the quad, I'd be there in an hour.
I hear you. I'd probably have to drive down tomorrow night for a little sample. Well, tell us how people can get a hold of you. I know there's two or three different ways if they like to put an order in for some good old Big Head Chuck's barbecue.
You can reach me at my website, which is bigheadsbbq.net, bigheadsbbq.net. You can reach me on Facebook, Big Heads BBQ. It's facebook.com/BigHeadsBBQ. And you can also catch me on Twitter, Big Heads BBQ or Big Head Chuck.
And then there's an email, too, they can order on, right?
The email is bigheadchuck@gmail.com.
There you go. So a lot of different ways to get a hold of Chuck. I recommend y'all go to that website and check it out. He's got his full menu on there. And I recommend you come by the BAMS radio tent in the front lawn of Little Hall just across from the quad, right next door to the Shelby County Alumni Chapter tent. Y'all come on out there. What time would be the earliest they could get there and get some food Saturday, Chuck?
You know, I'm thinking I'm going to get there fairly early. I mean, the food will be ready probably around 11:30, 12 o'clock. Now, I can't guarantee that it's going to make it past 1 o'clock because, you know, we got a lot of people coming. So if you want some good barbecue, it's free barbecue. You know, there's I'm not going to name my competition, but they've got trailers right across the road. They're selling barbecue, but we're giving it away. We're giving it away. All you got to do is come by and tell us you listen to Bam's Radio, and you know, get you a sample of barbecue. Don't spend your money when it's free.
That's you can't beat it. I mean, I'm telling y'all, it's worth it for the sauce itself, but I can also highly recommend all the various and sundry different fixings that Chuck's brings, you know, to go with the barbecue. Tell us about some of those fixings, Chuck.
Well, my baked beans, I'm pretty proud of my baked beans. I don't open up a can and dump it in a pan. I spend some time with it and tender love and care. Everything I make is from homemade. I mean, granted, the beans do come out of the can, but I spice them up a little bit. But, you know, some people don't like coleslaw, but I spend a lot of love and time with my coleslaw. If you look at me, you can tell that I know food. I didn't get this way by accident. There was no accident the way I'm 6'6". I weigh 320 pounds. I know good food. And I know good barbecue. I love my barbecue. And, I mean, everything goes good together. You could just put it in a bowl, mix it up, and eat it all together. You think you're eating the world's best barbecue casserole.
There you go. That's a great way to put it. Well, listen, Chuck, we appreciate you calling in. I know you've had a long, hard day cooking. We appreciate you, you know, for being one of our sponsors and also for everything that you do, you know, for the folks that come by the BAMS tent. It's just not the same when you're not there. And I want to thank you for all that and also for taking time to call us tonight.
Hey, I want to make sure people understand they are welcome to hang out at the BAMS tent, the radio, the whole shebang. But please make sure you bring a chair and bring your own drinks. Well, you know, we don't – it's kind of pricey to try to supply everybody drinks and everything. But if you want to come out and hang out with all the Twitter crew, please bring a chair and please bring you something to drink. Whatever y'all want to drink, just bring it with you.
Roll Tide on that, buddy.
Roll Tide. We'll see y'all Saturday.
All right. Have a good one. Appreciate you calling, Chuck. That's Big
sir.
Head Chuck from Big Head Chuck's Barbecue. Y'all heard him. Y'all come on out to the BAMS tent this Saturday. You probably should get there sometime between 11 and 1 if you want a shot at some of that great barbecue. And, again, we do appreciate Chuck for giving us a call. Thomas, what's your theory?
That I am exceptionally hungry right now. That's about as far as I've gotten. I have to say, I said before, I'll be there, and I am really looking forward to meeting fans. I will warn folks, I'm a lot younger than apparently I sound on the radio, so I'm used to the "oh my god, you're young" thing. And I'm looking forward to the barbecue. It's excellent. It is a reason in and of itself to come to the BAMS Radio tailgate and meet people. It's just that good.
Well, if you can imagine Lou Holtz when he's about 25 years old, you got Thomas Watts. That's who you're looking for if you're trying to meet him.
Sweet, except I'm taller. Anyway, it's about 9:05. I know Drew will be calling in at about 9:10, but I do want to surprise our fans. I did not know this guy will be joining us, but I'm going to go on and bring on Legend for a little while so that we can add another voice to the conversation. Again, we do have lines open if you would like to join us at 714-510-3707. We'd love to hear from you about the Colorado State game, Big Head Chuck's Barbecue, or the Ole Miss game that's coming up, or anything else that strikes your football fancy this evening. Anyway, Legend, you are live. I think this is Legend's number. I think I remember that correctly. How you doing?
What's going on, BAMS brothers? What's going on?
We just as blessed as we are broke, buddy.
Well, let me join the crowd. Damn, I'm hungry.
I think everybody listening to the program is.
I'm ready to go get me some barbecue and some fries and some toasted bread. Somebody get the coleslaw on the table, please.
Well, I get a feeling we're about to have a bunch of visitors from the Sons of the Saving tent across the road.
Free barbecue. You're going to have a line all the way around Denny Chimes talking about the free barbecue. That's some good stuff.
But you hear it here now. We're not putting signs up.
Y'all had to have some kind of BAMS Radio badge or something. Get out of that line before I get me some barbecue.
There's a secret in shake. It's so secret that only I know of. But
well, I have a version of it.
What you got going on tonight?
Not much right this second. I think our Drew DeArmond will be joining us pretty soon, so we'll get some scoop from him about recruiting in the upcoming game. But this is kind of your moment in the sun. What do you think of the Colorado State game?
Nah, I was disappointed at times. It seemed like the team was just going through the motions. And I was disappointed because it was the first home game of the season, and I thought they'd really come out and put a beat down on them. But, you know, you can't complain too much about a 20-point win or a 25-point win. So I still think this is the best team in the nation. I hadn't hit the panic button. I know a lot of the Alabama Nation is hitting the panic button, but I don't really see no reason for alarm. I don't really think that Ole Miss is going to pose that big of a challenge this week. A lot of people do, but I don't. It seems like Alabama kind of plays through the competition a little bit these days, and I was disappointed, but there was areas of shining, too. I heard a good friend talking about Kerry, talking about the different players that played. I was glad to see some of the young cornerbacks get in the game. I was really impressed with Jackson. Kerry kind of nailed that one, and both of y'all and y'all's kind of expectations of him. But, you know, just overall, I still see areas that we need to improve in. But with the powder puff schedule we got, I don't see any reason why we won't improve. but overall, just happy that we won. Wasn't too happy with the struggle, though. The offense seemed to take a step back. So, what was y'all's impression?
Well, for me, I pretty much mirror yours. I do think it was kind of a hangover game. It didn't really surprise me, I guess. As the game got going, I can't say that. It doesn't worry me either. That's the other thing. I think it's exactly like the Texas A&M game. A solid win with a lot of teaching moments. That's almost exactly what you want for the first few games of the season while the team still spins up, figures out its identity, et cetera, et cetera. So I definitely, there's no panic button pushing for me. I can tell you that much. Kerry?
Well, I'm not pushing the panic button, but I got to be honest with you two guys. You know, I didn't walk out of the stadium feeling like I just watched number one team in the country play.
I have to agree with that. I would say that, you know, there's been some teams that's been more impressive this season. Oregon definitely looks like a juggernaut. And there's one or two other teams that you probably could make a case for. Oregon probably would be the best, but I have to agree with that, dude. They do not look like the number one team in the nation right now. And I don't know how the number one team in the nation should look, but I definitely didn't see it on the field Saturday. I have to agree with you.
I think the number one team in the nation would beat Colorado State by more than 25 points, probably more like 45. But, you know, it's a long season, and there hadn't been a game yet where the offense and the defense both get it together. You know, we saw the defense win the first and the third game. We saw the offense win the second game. So maybe this is the week that they play a complete game. It would sure be a good time to start.
Yeah, I agree with you. Well, I think the shufflings had a little something to do with it. I mean, you had a whole new cornerback crew this past week. What's the situation with Blue at corner? Is he a long-term injury, or is he expected back this week?
They expect him back because he's been practicing all week. The only person not practicing at all this week was Nick Perry, who announced on Twitter a few minutes ago that he's having season-ending shoulder surgery tomorrow. And Nick is a senior. I'm not sure he might or might not have played too much to get a medical red shirt. I'm not quite sure. I think he's right there on the edge. And I don't even know if he even plans to want to do that. But everybody besides Nick Perry that we didn't already know about is expected to play this week. Ballou's practiced all 3 days this week. Now, we don't know what happens after that 10 or 15-minute media viewing period. He may just go to the sidelines in. But as far as we know, he's going to play this week, Ballou. And he's got to play because I was telling Thomas that this is probably the third best group of receivers Alabama's going to see all year.
I have to agree with you. This Ole Miss team is not a bad football team. You see them giving us some problems?
I think it's going to be a lot closer than we'd like it to be, unless we have that complete game I was talking about with the offense and the defense. Ole Miss's offense is going to score some points. But like we were talking earlier, if Alabama's offense shows up with the attitude they did against A&M, then they'll move the ball too. I'm thinking something along the lines of about a 35-20 Alabama win.
Now I'll take that right now. I don't know. It could be a close game. I mean, Ole Miss is a program on the rise in the SEC. So
that'd have been a lot closer here if Christian Jones hadn't ran a kickoff back for a touchdown.
That's true. I noticed Alabama has, what is it, 5 or 6 non-offensive touchdowns already this season?
Right. They've done a great job of getting those, but you can't count on that every week. I mean, this really needs to be the week that both sides of the ball put it together and both play their best game. That way you can win decisively and erase some of the lingering doubts. Because, you know, yes, they're 3-0, and that's great, but they, like I said, they're for a complete game, and I can't think of any better group of outstanding citizens than Ole Miss and those outstandingly clean recruiting coach they have to put that kind of football.
That's funny. I tell you what, they paying somebody right down there. I know that they got something going on down there.
Hey, the Dunlap disease about the belly going over the belt, that applies to tires, too.
Ouch. Well, guys, our friend Drew DeArmond has been on hold for a little while, so I'm going to go bring him on live with us. Drew, thanks so much for being with BAMS Radio this evening. How's life?
Good, guys. We finally get the SEC home opener. It's going to be a crossroads game for this team. I was there Saturday, much like the legend and Jerry, and I watched the game live and in person and left a lot to be desired, but we're going to find out, you know, what this team is truly made of Saturday, I think.
Like I told those guys, Drew, when I walked out of the stadium, I didn't feel like I'd seen a number one team in America.
And I agree with that. You know, it was a very uneven performance. You know, the offensive line left a lot to be desired. They definitely need seeing back. The interior I thought was very, very, very average, if even that. Not very good at all, really. And I'm still bothered by Cyrus Kwanjo. He's not been able to put together, you know, 60 minutes of good football. He's still getting holding penalties. They got a sack with 5 minutes left. He just doesn't seem to be zoned in. And he's definitely not playing, guys, like a top 5, top 10 pick, in my opinion.
What do you contribute some of his struggles to?
Well, you know, legend, that's funny. I think some of it is a little bit of he's trying to protect himself. I mean, I've seen this happen with guys who have high draft stock. They're a little bit – sometimes they don't want to get injured. They don't want to put themselves out there. But, in effect, they do more harm than good because – their play slips. He's just, he had some moments last year where he was, you know, mentally, he would have mental lapses, but they've just been mental lapses in the first game this season. And now he's supposed to be the bell cow of the offensive line and a de facto leader with Anthony Steen. I mean, they're the only two starters back. And to me, he just hasn't handled the fact that he's the hunted very well and that people are gunning for him and that, again, he needs to step up as a leader. And so far, his play is just, to me, he's just not been very good, especially for a guy of his caliber. I think he's capable of putting together a dominant performance, several dominant performances back to back to back, and he has not had one yet. I mean, A&M, I thought he was pretty solid, but he still got some penalties. They're going to need him to be at his best against Ole Miss because Robert Timbici is a young player, and he's a guy that Cyrus, with his experience and athleticism, should be able to take the kid to school. But if he's not where he needs to be mentally, them to get interesting, and that's not good for A.J. McCarron.
I'd be interested to hear your evaluation of Cyrus's brother and how he's doing on the line, and what do you see for his future?
Well, you know, Legend, I thought he was okay Saturday, not great by any stretch. A telling play to me was in the first quarter on the speed sweep to King and Drake. He was late, missed his block, and the play was blown up for a two-yard loss. I think he's been so far. He got benched the second half of the Virginia Tech game for Kellen Williams. To me, if you wanted to ask me who the weak link is going, I would say him and Ryan Kelly, but Ryan Kelly is going to start. To me, if someone is going to be changed in the lineup, it would be Kellen Williams in at left guard for him. He really needs to step it up and be more consistent. They both do, both the Quanjo brothers, because I think, you know, they have the ability. They were heavily recruited athletes to be a really solid left side of the offensive line. But to me, for their talent level, they've been average so far. Of course, a lot of that's going to go to Mario Cristobal. But to me, these guys,
I want to shift the focus to recruiting here.
Yes.
I wanted to shift the focus a little bit to recruiting, because that's one of the things you really bring to the table for us every week. Got a couple of more interesting answers coming in. We have a return trip from 2014 safety C.J. Hampton, who's an Alabama-Ole Miss battle, committed to Ole Miss. You tweeted today, Drew, about Richie Pettibon, offensive lineman from D.C., and then player that's visiting this weekend from the class of 2015 that you know so much about, Kerryon Johnson. Go ahead and tell us a little about those three young men.
Well, absolutely, guys. Kerryon Johnson, to me, is as good a high school athlete as you can find. He's a 2015 kid. You know, as we said, he should be a safety on the next level. Can play offensively. Can be, you know, he can play running back in the slot. He's similar to Kenyon Drake, but I think he's just got freakish ability at safety. If you take into account the fact that he would be coached by Nick Saban and Greg Brown, I think he has all-world talent as a safety. I think he can play on either side of the ball. But if he focused on defense from the word go, I definitely think he's a ha-ha Clinton Dix level athlete back there, maybe even better. I just think he has the it factor, the ball skills, the toughness. He's not a big hitter, but I think he's physical. And I just think he has a superhuman athletic ability, the leaping ability, the range. And just a guy, great hand-eye coordination, great hands. He made a play last week, zigzagging across the field. It was just unbelievable early to put that game away, to put him up 14-0 in a big game against Dessler. I was talking to Brent Beard, who covered that game, and he said it was just a highlight-level, big-time All-American-type play where he picks the ball off and zigzags for 70 yards. He's just a great athlete. And C.J. Hampton, you know, he's been well thought. He's an Ole Miss commit from Meridian, Mississippi. But he's a bigger safety, almost 6'2", and he's a guy that's the number one safety overall on Alabama's board, and he's just a guy that's very critical to the 2014 class. I think it was a very good sign that he showed up for the Colorado State game and that he's coming back to the Alabama-Ole Miss game, and I hope Alabama can step it up and play well and really make an impression on the young man. And then Ricky Pettibon, another 2015 kid, reminds me on tape a lot of Barrett Jones, very versatile. And he definitely has a spot in that next year's class. And, you know, I think Lance Thompson's done a very good job recruiting him. And I think Alabama has a chance, hopefully early in the process, to make a big-time impression. And I don't know if he will commit super early, but I know Alabama is near the top of his list right now. And on film, Pettibon looks just outstanding. I think he's a guy that can play center guard or tackle. But more likely, I think he's going to be an interior player, but he can play any of the five positions.
And his name sounds so familiar. I want to say Richie's got some NFL bloodlines.
Yes, he does. He's related to Richie Pettibon, I believe. I don't know exactly if it's a great uncle type situation, but he is related to the Pettibon family, and it's a football family, and he comes from great stock, no question about it.
Now, did we confirm? I think we did, but did we confirm that Marlon Humphrey showed up this past weekend?
I was told he did not. He did not come this weekend. I didn't see any indication of that. There had been plans for him, Christian Bell, and maybe the tailback to show up. His name escaped me. I know you probably have that with you, but I know that there was I knew it started with Bradrick. Yeah, Bradrick Shaw. There had been talk of Bradrick Shaw, Marlon, and Christian Bell showing up. I heard Darrell Williams was not going to come, but those three had been rumored to come, be coming on an official. But from what I was told, that is not going. That did not happen. Pardon me.
Well, I tell you, you know, if Marlon even watched the game on TV, he's got to see that there is readily available playing time at the corner.
There's no doubt about it, Kerry. Much like Legend, I was impressed with Eddie Jackson. I like his physical tools. He's very tall. He's got, you know, his arms come down to his knees almost, long arm kid. I think he's got a lot of potential. I liked Maurice Smith. I thought he played hard. I thought he tackled well. I thought Fulton's play left a lot to be desired, especially in coverage in the second half. But I do think as the season goes on, you're going to see a lot more of Mo Smith and Eddie Jackson. I was even told that Eddie Jackson could even start this coming weekend. We shall see, opposite Deion Ballou. But I do think the tools are there. But I agree with you totally, Kerry. Marlon Humphrey, as advanced as he is, he can see early playing time quickly because Geno Smith got some reps last week, but to me was very unimpressed.
I'm wondering why they pigeonhole Geno at the nickel and don't give him a shot at starting opposite of Ballou.
Well, I think a lot of it is earning his way back, Kerry. I think the DUI, it did some damage. And I know Coach Saban the week before was talking about how, you know, Jarek Williams had taken his job and he had to win a job and prove it and earn it. And I think they're making him earn the long road back, much like the way Coach Bryant has done with guys in the past like Kenny Stabler. I think he's, you know, I think they're making him take the long road back. I still think he has a lot of potential. It can help this football team this year very much so in the defensive backfield, whether it be at corner or star. But right now, they're making him earn the long road back, and Maurice Smith and Eddie Jackson are being fast tracked, and they're also still trying to develop Cy Jones.
Well, Drew, question from the chat room. Just from one of our listeners, why does it seem that Alabama is, quote-unquote, slacking on linebacker and defensive back this year?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say they're slacking on defensive back. I think that they took a lot. I think Calvarius Bissett is a very, very good player who nobody talks about. I've heard that the staff has him rated almost as high as Marlon Humphrey on the board. And, of course, they got Steven Roberts, who I think he's a bigger corner, an underrated corner from the state of Alabama. He came to visit this past weekend, reaffirmed his commitment to Alabama, and I think he will show up again this weekend, which is a very, very good sign for the Ole Miss game. And I also think they're still involved with Jalen Tabor. Alabama has made a move for Tabor, but Maryland has now also made a counter move. I think Alabama and Maryland could even be considered his top two. Mike Lockley on the Maryland staff is a very, very good recruiter, an Ole Miss level recruiter, to put it bluntly. But he's got them in the mix there. But I think they've got a really good class going, and it just needs to be set off by guys like Ronnie Clark, who will more than likely, you know, grow into a linebacker. But Ronnie Clark and C.J. Hansen and even Hootie Jones, they're still going to continue to recruit. But you add those guys with what they have now, and at corner that already has committed, and Marlon Humphrey, and I think the secondary class will not be slacking at all. I think they're not really slacking right now. They just have a lot of guys, they're higher rated guys that haven't made their verbal commitments, but they're in very, very, very good shape for. And I think the secondary class is going to be very, very good. Linebacker, I think they were satisfied with where they were coming into this season. I know that, you know, Tyler Hayes is no longer with the program, DJ Petway, but I think they felt like on the interior spots that they didn't need a lot of guys, and they got Sean Deion Hamilton very early in the process, who they liked very much, Zach Whitley from Houston, Texas, who they like a lot as well, and the one they're focusing on right now is Raekwon McMillan, very well documented, and he is a very, very good player. And also, let's not forget Kerry's guy and my guy, Keith Holcomb, who they, you know, took early in the summer, and a lot of people questioned it, and it now looks like that was a brilliant move. He was at the game this past Saturday, and a lot of people think he will be a top 50, 60 national recruit when everything is re-ranked. So I think the linebacker in the secondary class, especially if they get Raekwon McMillan, could be very, very good in both areas. I don't think they're slacking at all.
We mentioned a couple of people already, really three or four, that are visiting this weekend. Any other visitors of note that you know of coming in this weekend?
The last one I got this afternoon, guys, was Kerryon Johnson confirmed via Twitter that he was coming. I'm assuming that the list is going to grow. I mean, everybody's talking about Cameron Robinson, C.J. Hampton, Steven Robert. I believe it's coming back. I do think by the end of this week, you will build, in the next day, 24 to 48 hours, the list is going to grow quite a lot, and I think it's going to be a very high-level list of players coming in. I have not been able to confirm any of those after also confirming Pettibon, but I still think, Kerry, it's going to be a very, very good group coming in this weekend, both from Alabama and Mississippi, to see this clash. And I'm hoping, and I have a feeling in my gut, that this football team is going to step it up, and I think they're going to Ole Miss is, I think their mouths are writing some checks maybe that their bodies can't cash, but we'll find out Saturday.
Oh, the bank will be open, that's for sure. I'm going to see Ronnie Clark this Friday. Really looking forward to it. I realize I'm probably only going to see him play quarterback, but it should be fun watching him rack up some points against the Shelby County team in Columbiana. It's probably going to be a brutal game. But I'm really curious, are we any closer at all to a decision from Ronnie Clark?
It's kind of gone on the back burner, Kerry. I heard that he was very close last week, and then as I'm sure you've heard it's well documented. He had some cramping issues, severe cramping issues. Did not finish the game last week. Went to the hospital and was treated and got out at that point. But I have not heard anything definitive about a decision if it could be coming this week. If I guess it very well could. I hope he comes to the football game Saturday. I think it would be a good sign if he comes to the Alabama-Ole Miss game. And I'm still hearing that Alabama feels like that they're in the driver's seat in the situation. But no definitive date for Ronnie Clark. And I'm glad that you're going to see him play. We hope to have you on my scoreboard show to recap how he's looked. Because I have not been able to check this week to see what his health situation was. I was told it was not, going to be any kind of season ender or out for a while kind of situation last week. But it's now good to confirm that he should be back this week and playing on the field. And that's good for Calera, who's the number one team in 4A.
The irony is a game I was covering, which was played in Alabaster between Prattville and Alabaster, a player from the game I was covering, Auburn commitment senior running back Cam Petway, he had a severe ankle sprain. He was taken to Shelby County Medical Center right there on 31 in Alabaster. And somewhere in that same time frame, Ronnie Clark was at the same hospital. Now, I doubt that Cam Petway saw him or tried to recruit him to Auburn or anything like that, but it's kind of iron that Ronnie was taken for cramps and they found out he was okay. Cam was taken for an ankle. They x-rayed and it was negative. But I thought that was really wild that two of the star recruits in the whole state got transferred to the same hospital in about an hour and a half period.
Yeah, that is ironic. It's kind of strange. We had you on our show and we talked about that. Cam Petway, I think he's a very fine running back. He's a between the tackles kind of guy, but that is kind of it's extremely ironic that they would both go down with injuries and have to be treated at the same facility. But again, it's good to see that Ronnie Clark's back, and he's a guy I'd love to see in person, to see his size and athleticism. I stood next to the young man at the spring at the A-Day game. He's every bit of 6'3", looked to me to be about 215. He's very, very well put together, and I definitely look forward to hearing what you think of him as a prospect, because I do think he's a guy that Alabama needs to sign and develop into an outside linebacker, a Sam-type linebacker, one of these guys, he and Keith Holcomb, that can you can use against these spread attacks that are very, very good in coverage and can take away some of the spread concepts and some of the hurry-up advantages that these offenses have over the defenses when they can isolate a linebacker like Trey DePriest, who's not very fleet of foot and can be exploited in pass coverage.
And as I told you Friday night when I called your show, Drew, one of the big reasons I go to these games and write the Friday Night Lights stories for BamaMag.com is I try to uncover underclassmen that people may not know about. Well, as soon as Cam Petway got hurt, Prattville put in a sophomore running back who was 6 feet tall, 210 pounds. He scored from the 50, and he scored from the 3. So I want everybody to remember the name Kingston Davis. That's Kingston, K-I-N-G-S-T-O-N, sophomore at Prattville, Kingston Davis. And then I noticed a big nose guard clogging up the middle for Thompson of Alabaster. Turned out his dad's an assistant coach. Many Alabama fans remember Thomas Rayum blocking a field goal up at Penn State in 1989. His son, T.J. Rayum, is a sophomore nose guard and already looked to be about 6'3", 300. And so these are just two of the names to remember for the future. I just want to throw that out there. And, Drew, a lot of our people in the chat room and our listeners are hoping that you get a chance sometime between maybe 11 and 2. If you could run by the BAM's tent located in front of Little Hall just across from the quad this Saturday, a lot of people would like to meet you.
I would love to, guys. I'll definitely try to make time for that. I'm supposed to arrive and be setting up at my tailgate by 9:30 in the morning. Would love to come by. If you're there, Kerry, before the game, I'll definitely get in touch and try to get over there. I'd love to meet everybody. It'd be an honor to meet a lot of listeners, and we appreciate everybody that's listening, and we always appreciate the fact that they listen to our show and that they appreciate the knowledge that we bring and what we try to bring to the table and give some insight. And it's kind of ironic what you just said, because I'm looking at a picture of Thomas Ray. I'm blocking the field goal against Penn State right now.
That's awesome. Tell them how they can find you on Twitter and on the Internet, Drew.
On the Internet, I am at AlabamaIntel.com, Alabama Intel. And on Twitter, I am at Drew D. Al Intel. Drew D. Armand at Drew D. Al Intel. And just check me out. We're always going to be trying to break stuff and have good info. We've got some more this week. I'll probably try to be dropping some tidbits tonight. But just always keep up with us, and we always try to keep everybody on the pole, just like you do a great job at Bama Mac, Gary.
Thank you, Drew. I appreciate that, and I'm really gunning for call of the year on your Friday night show.
I hope so, man. We love having you, and we look forward to it Friday night. Thanks, man.
All right. That's Drew from Drew DeArmond from Alabama Intel. Appreciate his time, as always. Thomas, I believe it's that time of night when we transition over to the island.
Well, ironically, Legend dropped off, and he had a little bit of trouble with his phone, so I had to put him on hold, and then he dropped off again. So, Legend, if you're still listening, give us a call back, and we'll transition to the island. Kerry, can I hold you for 5 minutes, baby?
About four.
Okay, I'll take four. And this is actually, I didn't get a chance to ask Drew because he had to go, but one of our chat room people asked, how are we doing with Matt Elam? Do you have any insight on him?
Again, I heard an analyst speak. I don't want to give his name because he asked that we keep. But I heard a recruiting talk about a week and a half ago, and the guy who was making the talk said, and I think everybody already knows this, it's an Alabama-Kentucky battle. He wants to play for a winning program. Kentucky is not that, and they're not really showing him a whole lot this year, other than they can avoid being blown out by Louisville. I will give them the credit for that. But they're not really showing him like that he'd be playing for a winning program. It's expected to be a battle that goes, all the way probably till February. But he is a true nose guard, and he does fit the Alabama standard on defense of what they want out of a nose guard. He is seriously considering Alabama. Right now, I'd call it a dead heat. But I think in the back of his mind, if Alabama continues to win and Kentucky continues to lose, he's going to slowly but surely come over to the Alabama side. Alabama is definitely in it. They're definitely in the top two. But he is certainly a guy that we'll ask Drew about him again next week, because Drew addressed him a couple weeks ago. But we'll ask Drew about him again next week. But my understanding is it's Alabama or Kentucky, and, the longer the tide keeps winning and the Cats keep losing, the momentum is expected to shift toward Tuscaloosa on Matt.
Well, good to know. Thank you so much for that information. I hope that answers your question, RTR1 in chat. Unfortunately, it looks like Legend has not called back in, so I don't want to hold you any longer. I've taken my 4 minutes and run with him, so I guess we're going to go on and end the show. Before we go, Kerry, score prediction. What you got, Bama Ole Miss?
I'm going to say Alabama 35, Ole Miss 20.
Sounds good to me. I'm going to take Alabama 31-21. I think it's going to be a little bit closer, but the experience and everything will carry the day, and Alabama keeps on rolling. So, for Kerry Clark and all of our guests and friends of BAMS Radio that have contributed to the program this evening, thank you. Everybody have a great weekend. We will be at the BAMS Radio tailgate spot, which is
across from Denny Chimes, basically. Look for the big inflatable tent. Big Head Chuck will be fulfilling our bellies with barbecue. Until then, everybody have a great rest of the week and hope to see you on Saturday. Roll Tide.